I'm Bible reading this, this afternoon is from Genesis chapter 28. Genesis 28, starting at verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And over to chapter 32, starting at verse 22. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared.
Good evening. It's almost 6 o'clock vibes here, you know? It's pretty dark, isn't it? So it's good to be here tonight. See if we can stay awake. I haven't been that well this week, but it's good that I'm amongst friends and you'll be gracious to me. But Genesis, the book of Genesis, really, it's kind of a foundation story book, isn't it? It's like a, it's like if you want to understand what something's grown out of and the story of the Christian faith, what it's grown out of, you look at Genesis, and today we're looking at a significant part of Genesis. The face of Jacob is what we're looking at, and this story covers about 26 chapters of Genesis, so without a doubt, this is the largest face in Genesis. I didn't put a picture up there because the face would be too big to actually fit on the slide. Thank you, Tim, for that. Noting that everyone else got nice little faces and I get a massive face. But anyway, I'm part of a leadership team at my work, and I don't know if you've had this experience. Every Friday we have a meeting, and every Friday we turn up and we want to discuss things of substance. We want to make some decisions, and we have interventions on ourselves probably once every 3 months saying we're spending too much time in the detail. We need to focus more on just making decisions in the meeting. So let's move the detail to pre-reading and let's focus our intention on what really matters here. And then the next week we turn up. This happened to me 2 days ago on Friday. It becomes obvious again that nobody has done the pre-reading yet again. And so we cover the detail again because we have to. I'm going to assume this evening that not all of you have done the required 26 chapters of pre-reading before tonight's sermon. So let's cover a little bit of the story and the key moments in Jacob's story before we pause and reflect on what kind of a man Jacob was And what can we learn from this foundation story for our lives today? There's a lot of significant moments across the 26 chapters, so I'll move fairly quickly. We start the story with Jacob, who, if you don't know, is the son of Isaac, the grandson of Abraham. He first appears in the story as a pretty opportunistic character. He has an older twin brother, Esau. There's a couple of twins here today, I can see. The first thing that he does in the story is he gets his apparently very hungry brother, Esau, to give up his birthright in exchange for a bowl of stew that Jacob has cooked him. A couple of chapters later, Genesis 27 and 28, with the help this time of his mother, Rebekah, he then again deceives his older brother Esau, as well as his father Isaac this time, and gets him to also, he also steals from his older brother Esau the fatherly blessing, which is a significant kind of ritual and rite of passage in this family story. And it rightfully, again, belonged to his older brother Esau. So it's Jacob then who receives the covenant blessing that we first see turn up in this story, that when it's given to his grandfather Abraham back in Genesis chapter 12. After receiving this covenant blessing, Esau wants to kill his younger brother Jacob. So Jacob runs off to a place called Haran, which is where his mother Rebekah has come from. And on the way, Jacob has this well-known dream of a ladder reaching up to heaven with angels coming up and down, which was read for us today. And in that dream, as we heard, Jacob has this significant encounter with God. You'll see that there's this recurring theme of significant encounters with God as we go through the story. And God here reaffirms the blessing that he's already received from his father Isaac. And Jacob responds by naming this place Bethel, which means house of God. And Bethel will become a significant part of the story of God's people for generations to come. After having the dream, he continues his journey off to Haran. When he first arrives in Haran, he comes to a well, and there he meets Rachel, which is his cousin, a woman that he is immediately smitten with. And this place also, this well, will become significant in the biblical story because into the New Testament, Jesus meets a Samaritan woman at Jacob's well and has a significant encounter with her there. But Jacob makes an agreement with his uncle, now that he's landed here, to stay and work with him, not for wages, but for his second daughter's hand in marriage, Rachel's hand in marriage. Genesis 29:20 tells us Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Isn't that beautiful? 7 years ticks over. Jacob, as you can imagine, is very keen to spend time with his wife that's been promised to him, but his uncle Laban deceives him and swaps his first daughter Leah without Jacob's knowledge. I don't exactly know how that happens, but he lays with his now new wife Leah, and when Jacob does realize in the morning what has happened to him, he's clearly not happy. But Laban, his uncle, describes to Jacob that this is our family custom. We always give the first daughter in marriage. If you would like to marry my second daughter, that's fine. I'll give you her as well. But all I ask for in return is another 7 years of hard labor. Jacob's not happy, but he agrees. 14 years of hard labor for the woman that he loves. Gentlemen, can you imagine that? Would you do that? Ladies, can you imagine your husband coming to your father and asking for your hand in marriage and being told, yes, that's fine, but you just have to work for me for 14 years. My lovely wife's not here right now, but I can tell you, I can imagine it. And if you've met her, you can understand why. Isn't that lovely? Jacob then, 14 years, he works another 6 years with his uncle, total of 20 years. And as is sometimes the case in family businesses, things get a little bit strained. Jacob's response to those things getting a little bit strained is that he decides to take all of his father-in-law's livestock, flee in the middle of the night and go back to his homeland. Perhaps not wise, but that's what he decides to do. And you'll remember that Jacob didn't leave his original homeland on great terms with his older brother Esau. And so when he gets back to Canaan, he sets up camp on the edge of the land. And while he's set up camp there and waiting to see how Esau would react to his return, he has this second encounter with God where he wrestles through the night. At the time, it's an unknown man that he's wrestling with. So Genesis chapter 32 picks this up. Man wants to leave at daybreak. Jacob refuses to let him go unless he first gives Jacob a blessing. I won't let you go unless you bless me. The man asks Jacob his name, and in response, he says, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you've struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. So this encounter with God. And then to his surprise, after this encounter, his brother Esau actually welcomes him back into the land with open arms. In Genesis 35, God speaks to Jacob again and calls him back to Bethel. You remember this is where he has the initial dream. And God once again reaffirms his new name and his covenant with Jacob. Your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. You will be called Israel. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will be among your descendants. This is a super significant moment, actually, in the history of the world. The nation that we now know as Israel receives its name in this encounter. Before Israel was a nation, it was a family. And before it was a family, it was a man. And Jacob was that man. This is a foundational story in the Christian story. And then from Genesis 37 onwards, the focus shifts a little bit as we pick up the well-known story of Joseph. Joseph, if you do not know, is the 11th son of Jacob. And the story shifts a little bit because Jacob starts being portrayed, I guess, as sort of a grieving father. As you can imagine, you know the story. His 10 sons take him and sell him into slavery, come back and convince Jacob that his son has been killed. And so he grieves over this. He grieves for years and years, and the story continues. And years later, during a famine, there's not enough food, so Jacob sends his 10 brothers, 10 of his 11 sons at that time, down to Egypt to find food. And Joseph is now appointed as a powerful leader in Egypt, plays around with his brothers for a little while, and then eventually lets them know that it is him, reveals himself, and sends his brothers back to his father Jacob, where he receives with gladness the news that his son, whom he loves, is still alive. And then Genesis 46, there's 50 chapters in the book of Genesis, so we're getting towards the end. Jacob, who is still in the land of Canaan, which remember is significant because it's been promised to him by God, sets out for Egypt. So it's a significant move, and he takes his whole family, which at the time we're told in the scriptures, numbers about 75 people now between children and grandchildren, and goes down to Egypt. And God assures him that that's fine to do. He lives there for 17 years, and as he nears death, he makes Joseph, his son, promise that he won't bury him there, but he will take him back to his homeland to bury him, the land that was promised to him and his fathers. So that's the story. It's a story about a man. It's a story about his family. But more than that, as I've said, it is the story of the birth of a nation. It's the story of Israel. The family line is summarized for us in Genesis chapter 35. Jacob has 6 sons and a daughter with his first wife, Leah. He has 2 sons with Bilhah. We won't go into this tonight, but it's the maidservant of Rachel, who is his second wife, because she was infertile for many years. Then he has 2 sons with Zilpah, who is the maidservant of his first wife, Leah. And then finally, after many years of infertility, has a son, Joseph, with his beloved wife, Rachel. And then a second son, Benjamin. And in childbirth with Benjamin, Rachel actually dies in childbirth. And I think, just as an aside, but while today I'm focusing our attention on Jacob, this is a very male story, right? Jacob and his 12 sons significantly become the 12 founding fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. But it's also important as we look at a family story and a story of a nation to acknowledge that this story is also about Leah and about Rachel and about Bilhah and about Zilpah. I'm not sure if you know how these things work, if your parents had this conversation with you when you were young, but you cannot birth a nation without the help of a partner. So the story of the nation of Israel is also the story of these four women. And I think we'll look at a couple of them in the coming weeks. So this family story continues through the pages of our Bibles and eventually becomes a particularly significant story. Why? Because this family story is also the family story of Jesus. Jesus, as a first century Jew, was born into the nation of Israel. A communal culture, perhaps we don't fully get this. Maybe people from a Middle Eastern culture or a First Nations culture might get what's going on here. We're a hyper-individualized culture here in Australia. But your identity when you are born into this family is inseparable from your ancestry. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob are not merely names in the depths of history that we read about. No, they are us. It's a collective we. They define who we were. And Jesus, if you remember, is not only born into this story, but identifies himself with this family story. This is my story. So when Jesus or Paul or John or other New Testament authors pick up on this pretty well-known theme of come join the family of God, this is what they're talking about. It's a covenant community that shapes the whole of who you are. Come join the family. This story becomes our story. This is my story as a follower of Jesus, as a member of the family of God. This is my story. The New Testament makes this super explicit. The promises that God made to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob are extended to all people. Matthew chapter 8, verse 11, Jesus, he's speaking here about the faith of a non-Jewish person, a Roman centurion, and he says this, "Many will come from the east and the west, and they will take their places at the feasting table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." You are invited into the story. The Roman centurion was welcomed into the covenant story. All people, through Jesus, are welcomed into this story, into this family, welcomed at the family table. Being at the table as a family member is a very different thing to being at the table as a guest. So as we engage with this story today, I guess it raises a very real question for us. If this is a story that you identify with, how might we allow this story, our family story, to shape who we are and how we understand ourselves to be and how we understand ourselves to live in this world? And if that's the question, well, perhaps the key foundational concept in Jacob's story, it's a thread that runs right throughout the story, is that we're invited into this idea of a covenant. And associated with this covenant is a blessing. It's a really strong thread. Pick up the story with me back in Genesis chapter 8 and verses 13 to 15. I mentioned this earlier. It was the first passage that Liz read for us. Jacob's at Bethel again, and he has this dream of a ladder reaching from earth up into heaven. And we're told that there, above the ladder, stood the Lord. And this is what God says in this encounter with Jacob. "I'm the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you," here we go, "you and your descendants, the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the east and the west, to the north and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. And I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised to do for you." Covenant. With the covenant comes blessing. It's a continuation of the original blessing that was given to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. If you look at the two side by side, they all say descendants, numerous as the stars in the sky, vast as the dust of the earth. I'll give you a land that I've promised to you. Through these people that are your descendants, well, I will bless all nations and all people. And I promise, Jacob, that I will be with you. This covenant is the foundational story of God's redemption story as it runs through the whole of the scriptures, through the Old Testament and into the New Testament. God would establish a chosen people through Jacob, who would then serve as a channel of blessing to the whole world. Can't overstate this, these promises given to Abraham, confirmed now to Jacob, become the lens through which the nation of Israel understands its place and its story in the world. If I asked you or asked anyone in this room to say, what does it mean to be an Aussie? What might you say? Maybe mateship or a fair go. Or if you're old enough, it might be Ganga Jang or Johnny Farnham, You're the Voice, or I don't know. What defines us as a nation? For Israel throughout the Old Testament, they would say, we're God's chosen people. He's given us a promised land. He's going to make us into a great nation. And somehow through us, he's going to be a blessing to the whole of the world. Like it's that deep in the fabric of the nation. And then Jesus arrives on the scene a couple of thousand years later. That's the story of the nation of Israel. And he, along with the New Testament authors that wrote about him, make this quite astonishing claim that actually through him, all of those promises are now fulfilled. That blessing is now extended out to all people. Galatians chapter 3, verse 14. Paul explicitly makes the claim that this promised blessing to Israel is fulfilled in Jesus and extended to all who put their faith in Jesus. So that's the key theme in this story, which has become my family story and perhaps yours as well. But what about Jacob himself? What was he like? What can we learn about the man himself? That's sort of the framing of the series, Faces of Genesis. Well, a few things stand out from a quick reading of the story of Jacob. Jacob's a liar. Jacob's a deceiver. Jacob's not particularly courageous. Jacob's hunted by his own brother who wants to kill him. He's forced to flee and live in another land. On the way, he has this significant encounter with God that we've just talked about. A dream that maybe you and I would only ever dream of having. In response, what does he do? Given this remarkable blessing, he says, well, okay, you, God, creator of all the universe, doesn't bow down and worship. He says, well, yeah, okay, if you do all that you've promised to do for me, well, then I will also serve you as my God. It's a conditional promise in response. His relationships are complicated, to say the least. He shows clear favoritism, loving one wife over another. Genesis chapter 29, we get this pretty deeply confronting picture of the story of Leah. And I think Joe's speaking on Leah next week. But effectively, Leah bears son after son after son six times. And each time she says something to the effect of, the Lord has given me this son because the Lord has seen my misery. Perhaps now that I've borne another son, my husband will love me. He carries that same pattern of favoritism into his parenting. Genesis chapter 37 tells us Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Are you getting the picture? Not a super impressive man. As you read the story, he's deeply flawed, but he's actually also striking that he's quite ordinary. He's an ordinary man. I'm clearly not God, but if I was and I was choosing a founding father for my chosen people, a forefather who would inspire and unite my people, lead them through generations, then I would not choose this man. And think about the author of Genesis. If you were tasked with writing a foundational story for a nation, a history that would sort of set you up for the future, would you write a story like this? Jacob is no Winston Churchill. He's no Nelson Mandela. He's no Abraham Lincoln. He's a very ordinary man. A couple of thousand years later, again, it's actually astonishing if you look at how much Jacob is referred to in the New Testament, how much this story is kind of foundational to themes that are picked up in the New Testament. But again, Romans chapter 9, the Apostle Paul looks at this exact story, the story of Jacob and his twin brother Esau. And he's talking about the idea of God's election of people. And he says this, before the twins were born, before they'd done anything that could be regarded as good or bad, in order that God's purposes in election might stand, not by works, but by God who calls, Rebekah, the mother, was told that the older will serve the younger. For God says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. I will show compassion to whom I will show compassion. It, your election to receive God's grace, does not therefore depend on human desire or human effort, but on God's mercy. Jacob's story is not only the beginning of the Old Testament story of Israel. It's the forerunner to God's story of grace. It tells us that God has the freedom to choose, and God chooses to choose by grace to offer blessing. One of the striking things about the story as you read the 26 chapters is that God is actually not overly present. It's the story of a family and of a man, and yet God turns up. When he turns up, he is important and central, but not overly prominent. While he is not the most prominent character, he certainly is the central character. This is a story of a man and a nation, yes, but at the heart of the story is the fact that they are chosen, that they're chosen by a faithful God. They are significant because they are chosen by a faithful God. The covenant promises I mentioned earlier endure throughout this story, throughout history, because they rest not on human capacity or on human faithfulness, but on the faithfulness of God. And I stand here today speaking to you about this guy. Why? Not because of anything he did or how impressive he was, but again, because God chose him. Because God chose to bless him and to bless his descendants. And ultimately, because God fulfilled a promise that was made to this man, Jacob, thousands of years later through sending his son into this family line and fulfilled these promises through the coming of Jesus. That's why we're talking about Jacob tonight. One final thing as I begin to wrap up that I think really stands out in Jacob's story is the intimacy that Jacob enjoys with God. Let's look at this encounter towards the end of the story of Jacob. Genesis 48, again, Genesis 50 is the end of the story. We actually see that there is a trend, there is a bit of a maturing in Jacob through the story. He kind of does all this random stuff, pretty wild stuff early on in the story. As you get to the kind of father figure of Jacob, he does mature, he seems to become more wise, he's much more aware of God's presence in his life. And so what's happening here in Genesis 48? Well, again, a very human, very beautiful interaction, I think, between Jacob and his son Joseph, and then Joseph's sons. So Jacob, his son, and his grandsons. Here he's the father now of a large and growing family, and he's passing on the blessing that was given to him by his father Isaac to his son Joseph and his grandsons. Same ritual, same rite of passage. Let me read it from verse 15. And Jacob blessed Joseph, and he said, "May the God before whom my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, walked faithfully, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they be called by my name, the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they increase greatly on the earth." The blessing is passed on. But remember, I talked about the encounters that Jacob has with God. When God does turn up in this story, on the few occasions that he does, it's to encounter Jacob. One of the strange things I find is that he does a couple of times Jacob sort of come to God and ask God for things. But actually, the more prominent pattern in the story is Jacob is going about his ordinary, everyday life, and God just turns up and encounters him. God chooses to intervene in Jacob's life in significant ways. Today is Pentecost Sunday. It's 50 days since the end of Easter. What do we celebrate on Pentecost Sunday? We celebrate the giving of the Holy Spirit to the early church in the book of Acts. It's another example, a prominent example in the scriptures of where God just chooses to intervene with his presence into the life of his covenant people. This is the God that I experience. Most of my life, like Jacob's life, is very human. It's very day-to-day. I'm here for a whole bunch of reasons, but I'm here partly because this God has chosen to encounter me and turn up in my life. Jacob walked with God, he dreamt about God, he wrestled with God. Certainly later in his life, he sought to honor God, and God met with him. Key part of the covenant blessing that was given to Jacob is the promise, if you remember, "I am with you, I will always be with you. I'm with you, I will always be with you." At the end of his life, Jacob recognizes this, "The God who has been my shepherd through all the days of my life." He recognizes that God has indeed been faithful. "I'm with you, Jacob, I'm always with you." So in some ways, this is the story of Jacob, but deeper than that, this is God's story, right? It's the foundation story for God's story in the world. Along those lines, my story, Israel's story, your story, Australia's story, it's all God's story. The Creator God chooses to encounter us. It's not the story of a great man, it's the story of a great and faithful God. If there's something that we should take from Jacob, I would hope it would be the posture that Jacob learns by the end of his life. And I think this sums it up. "May I walk faithfully." God, just, I come before you and I just, I'm flawed, I'm a wrestler, I'm a limper, I'm a deceiver sometimes. I recognize if it's up to me, I'm pretty shot, but may I walk faithfully. Would you walk with me? I need you. And would you bless me? Would you not only walk with me, but would you give me all that I need to live in this world well and to honor you and to please you? Jacob's story reminds us about a man who walked with God imperfectly, as each of us also walk with God imperfectly. But friends, God chose him. And when God chose him, God made a covenant with him. And the God of this story, despite all the failures of Jacob, is a God who, when he makes that covenant, fulfills the promises that come alongside that covenant. That same God chooses me, chooses you, chooses us, covenants with us, covenants with me. when I accept the grace of Jesus given to me, God covenants with me. He says, you're welcome into my family. You're adopted as my child. That same God will also walk with me, and if you choose to follow Jesus as well, he covenants with you. He will choose to walk with you faithfully through all the days of your life. Can I encourage us today as we finish, and maybe as the band comes up, to very simply invite God to walk with you, ask God to walk with you, invite God to bless you. Recognize that actually, if life's hard at the moment, if you're finding it hard to follow and to walk faithfully, you, like Jacob, are dependent on God giving his grace in abundance to you and blessing you. So invite God to bless you and trust that God will do what he has promised. May I walk faithfully. Would you walk with me? And would you bless me?